lives, always moving on, selling glasses diamond, but somehow it just didn't seem to work anymore. The flair wasn't there. The fun had dropped out of it. Even the cards didn't seem to work for him. The money ran out, and one winter, in some inn that was no more than a slum, he turned his face to the wall, and an angel appeared. "What just happened?" said Miss Dearheart. "Perhaps you do get two." "Only a passing thought," said Moist. He let the golden glow rise. He'd fooled them all, even here. But the good bit was, he could go on doing it. He didn't have to stop. All he had to do was remind himself, every few months, that he could quit any time. Provided he knew he could, he'd never have to. And there was Miss Dearheart, without a cigarette in her mouth, only a foot away. He leaned forward. There was a loud cough behind them. It turned out to have come from Groat, who was holding a large parcel.
"Sorry to interrupt, sir, but this just arrived for you," he said,
and sniffed disapprovingly.
"Messenger, not one of ours. I thought I'd better bring it straight up, because there's something moving about inside it."
There was, and air holes, Moist noted. He opened the lid with care and pulled his fingers away just in time.
12.5%! 12.5%!
Screamed the cockatoo, and landed on Groat's hat. There was no note inside, and nothing on the box but the address.
"Why'd someone send you a parrot?"
said Groat, not caring to raise a hand within reach of the curved beak.
"It's Giltz, isn't it?"
said Miss Dearheart.
"He's given you the bird?"
Moist smiled. "It looks like it, yes. Pieces of 8.
12.5%, yelled the cockatoo.
"Take it away, will you, Mr. Groat?" said Moist.
"Teach it to say...
"Trust me," said Miss Dearheart.
"Good one," said Moist.
"Yes, do that, Mr. Groat." When Groat had gone, with the cockatoo balancing happily on his shoulder, Moist turned back the woman. "And tomorrow," he said, "I'll definitely get the chandeliers back."
"What? Most of this place doesn't have a ceiling," said Miss Dearheart, laughing.
"First things first, trust me. And then, who knows, I might even find the fine polished counter. There's no end to what's possible." And out in the bustling cavern, white feathers began to fall from the roof. They may have been from an angel, but were more likely to be coming from the pigeon that a hawk was just disemboweling on a beam. Still, they were feathers. It's all about style. Sometimes the truth is arrived at by adding all the little lies together and deducting them from the totality of what is known. Lord Vetinari stood at the top of the stairs in the great hall of the palace and looked down on his clerks. They'd taken over the whole huge floor for this concludium. Chalked markings, circles, squares, triangles, were drawn here and there on the floor. Within them, papers and ledgers were piled in dangerously neat heaps. And there were clerks, some working inside the outlines and some moving noiselessly from one outline to another, bearing pieces of paper as if they were a sacrament. Periodically, clerks and watchmen arrived with more files and ledgers, which were solemnly received, assessed, and added to the relevant pile. Abacuses clicked everywhere. Clerks would pad back and forth, and sometimes they would meet in a triangle and bend their heads in quiet discussion. This might result in their heading away in new directions, or, increasingly as the night wore on, one clerk would go and chalk a new outline, which would begin to fill with paper. Sometimes an outline would be emptied and rubbed out, and its contents distributed among nearby outlines. No enchanter's circle, no mystic's mandala, was ever drawn out with such painfully meticulous care as the conclusions being played out on the floor. Hour after hour it went on, with a patience that at first terrified and then bored. It was the warfare of clerks, and it harried the enemy through many columns and files. Moist could read words that weren't there, but the clerks found the numbers that weren't there, or were there twice, or were there but going the wrong way. They didn't hurry. Peel away the lies, and the truth would emerge, naked and ashamed and with nowhere else to hide. At 3 a.m., Mr. Cheeseborough arrived, in a hurry and bitter tears, to learn that his bank was a shell of paper. He brought his own clerks, with their nightshirts tucked into hastily donned trousers, who went down on their knees alongside the other men and spread out more papers, double-checking figures in the hope that if you stared at numbers long enough, they'd add up differently. And then the watch turned up with a small red ledger, and it was given a circle of its own, and soon the whole pattern reformed around it. It wasn't until almost dawn that the sombre men arrived. They were older and fatter and better, but not showily, never showily dressed, and moved with the gravity of serious money. They were financiers too, richer than kings, who were often quite poor, but hardly anyone in the city outside their circle knew them.